Every once in a while, you stumble across events in the city of Winnipeg and you go, this is really interesting. This is really neat. Two guests join us, and this is a national mathematics conference, but it also includes people from around the world. And we're going to talk about the link between math and our daily lives. Dr. Arvind Gupta is Scientific Director of the Network of Centers of Excellence. And tell us a little bit about MITEX and what that stands for in a second. Dr. Rebecca Marsh is here. She teaches at the University of Alberta. Both are in the city of Winnipeg for this. Dr. Gupta, tell us a little bit. What is MITEX? You're not allowed to tell us what it stands for?
MITEX is the Mathematics of Information Technology and Complex Systems, or a Federal Center of Excellence. I said, we're not, our branding people tell us that we should just say MITEX now, because it's like Coca-Cola. What does Coke stand for?
Yeah, but you say MITEX, and somehow I think you're taking money from me.
We are funded by the federal government, so we're hopefully using your tax dollars in wise ways.
Dr. Marsh, you're from the University of Alberta. What's your basic research? Because I was telling our other host here, Larry Updike, the morning host, that you're involved in the virtual liver.
Yes, so I've just completed my PhD in biophysics.
Okay.
So I was doing applied mathematics, modeling how drugs flow through the body and how they interact with different components of the body.
So it's more along the lines of a computer program called the virtual liver.
Yes, it is. So the virtual liver is a mathematical model of a three-dimensional real human liver. So we use this in order to perform these computer experiments of drug transport through an organ such as the liver, as well as metabolism. So the conversion of a drug and removal from the body is done predominantly in the liver. That's why we've chosen to focus on this particular site right now.
More questions about that, but Dr. Gupta, you heard Dr. Amble talk about what's happening with TB here. Part of what you folks do is look at the math of this and calculate the odds of somebody being part of an outbreak. Tell us a little bit about that and pick up on the story.
Yeah, so we have a fairly significant research program with Public Health Agency and Health Canada looking at mathematical models for infectious disease. And this really started with the SARS outbreak about 5 years ago. And now Canada has built a pretty sophisticated and world-leading capability in modeling airborne diseases, sexually transmitted diseases. And we're looking at two different things. One is to have predictive power if there is an outbreak, give health officials predictive power in how the disease will spread, and two, give them tools that will let them answer what-if questions. What if we shut down an airport? What if we quarantine people? What if we shut down this particular road network? How will the disease spread change? And these are all probabilistic models, because you're never quite sure whether one person will infect another person, but you work on probability. So with large numbers and probabilities, you can get pretty good predictive power.
But based on other events, there's the science of it and there's the practicality of it as well.
Absolutely. We have to look at the topology you're working in. So, for example, a city, the disease will spread very differently than in rural communities. You have to look at time and then the pathology of the disease itself. So you look at questions of how long is someone infected before they're able to infect other people, how long will the disease reside in a person, how long before you see the symptoms, and so on. So you have to be able to model both the pathology of the disease and the environment that the disease sits in before you can get this kind of predictive power.
So tell us about some of what you're doing at this conference here in Winnipeg over the next few days.
Sure. This is a national conference that brings together most of Canada's mathematical community. And we'll be looking at a number of issues. We have a workshop in infectious disease models where we'll bring together many of these experts from Canada and around the world to share knowledge and to look at the best models that have been developed to date. And we'll look at many other issues. So we'll be looking at anything from quantum computing all the way over to network design, information security, and environmental issues.
We'll have more on that, because there's some great and fantastic things that you're doing here as well. For example, on information security, unlocking the secrets behind Alzheimer's and diabetes, and improving video surveillance. There's an interesting presentation. A team is developing algorithms to enable networks of security cameras to automatically select the most critical camera shots to be viewed by security personnel. You know, with hours and hours of footage, how do you determine what is a real security threat? We'll continue our conversation in a moment on CJOB 68. Dr. Arvind Gupta is Scientific Director, Network of Centers of Excellence in Mathematical Sciences. Dr. Rebecca Marsh from the University of Alberta is also here. They're in Winnipeg for a major mathematics conference. Numbers, CBS drama. FBI agent recruits his mathematical genius brother to help the Bureau solve a wide range of challenging crimes in Los Angeles. But this uses math. Have you seen the show?
You know, I attempted to watch the pilot episode. I watched maybe the first 5 minutes. They brought up some quantum mechanics theory. I can't say I completely agreed with the way they described it, and so I decided I just couldn't watch it anymore. That said, I do think that it provides good exposure for mathematics, and so maybe it can do for math what ER has done for medicine.
What is quantum mechanics?
It's a very good question. How much time do we have?
A few more minutes.
Okay. Quantum mechanics deals with the interactions at very, very small levels. So we're looking down at the atom and smaller than the atom. So between individual particles.
So what we're learning here is that the relationship between math and science is a lot closer than a lot of us think about when we're in school learning math, and that we are applying math through the scientific community every single day.
Yeah, and often and people will say that mathematics is the language of science. It's the way that the different sciences can communicate with each other. So within my tax, we don't distinguish so clearly between mathematics, computer science, statistics, physics, chemistry. We have scientists in all the various scientific disciplines working together. And again, they use mathematics as a way to communicate, to model problems, to find solutions in common.
I'd also just like to add that mathematics has many applications in other disciplines such as the arts. So if you're looking at economics, maybe you're trying to date an archaeological site, you're trying to do some architecture and build a building, mathematics can be used in so many different disciplines, not just in science.
So were you the math whiz in school? Were you kind of
I was a bit of the math geek. Not that you can tell now, right? But I was always really good at math. I love math. There I go. I said it on the air. I haven't always been in physics. I definitely, speaking of architecture, my first love was to be an architect, and then I went on and did some studies in economics, and I've always stayed very close to math. I've applied it to a lot of different disciplines, but I've always used math as a tool to explore other areas.
So the virtual liver, how is it helping pharmaceutical companies determine, you know, what's right and what's wrong?
Well, one of the advantages to doing mathematical modeling, such as with these virtual organs, is that we can perform experiments on a computer, and that avoids or at least complements to doing experiments in the lab or, for example, human clinical trials. These can be expensive, they can take a lot of time, and in the case of human clinical trials, of course, they can be very dangerous. So we can use mathematical modeling to help guide the process, for example, of drug development, drug discovery, and use it as a complement to these other types of research that we can do.
Dr. Gupta, ultimately your research takes us to the basics of computers, does it not?
Yeah, so, there's two answers. One is that most of the mathematical models we develop, of course, are instantiated on a computer,
right.
So they run on computers. But we also have lots of research that studies how computers work, new models of computers. Rebecca talked about quantum mechanics. We have quantum computing now where we take the quantum effects and try to see whether we can develop even smarter computers. You mentioned the security project. There we're using very sophisticated computer algorithms to understand if you have huge amounts of surveillance biometric information, which information should you pay attention to? And that's a big pattern matching problem. You want to look for anomalies, but of course there's always anomalies in any scene, so you have to look for anomalies that may lead to, in this case, some sort of security threat.
And I'm fascinated by the technology, but I'm thinking, how do you design a program to be able to tell what is a threat and what is not a threat?
That's a very good question. Of course, you have to work closely with security agencies who have studied patterns and threat patterns. Mainly, it's a big image processing pattern matching problem. You're looking at analyzing scenes and learning from those scenes over time which ones are anomalous and which ones are normal. And over time, a computer program can get pretty good. It's an area called machine intelligence, machine learning. You can get pretty good at recognizing anomalous patterns. Now, of course, you want to have a large error so that anything that might be a threat, you want to route humans to look at. But computers over time can develop fairly sophisticated ways of looking for anomalous patterns.
Dr. Marsh, are we doing enough to promote mathematics? And I'll ask the gender question here because I have two daughters who are very good in math. And I think that they're allowed to shine in the classroom now. But I wonder if that was always the case, especially when you were growing up, that, you know, you talk about yourself as being the math geek. But do we promote enough of the math and the sciences in our schools at a young age? I think we're turning the corner, but I'd like to hear your perspective on this.
Yes, I'd like to think that we're turning a corner. I'm not sure if we can ever promote it enough. During some of my teaching at sort of the first year university level, I've found that a lot of the female students still have this belief that they're not good at math, they can't understand computers, these sorts of beliefs about their abilities that are completely unfounded. I mean, these are very smart women. They are indeed able to understand math and to do math, and somewhere that they've learned that either that's not the case or that maybe it's not cool, or maybe they just don't see what are they going to do with it. You know, when they envision themselves in a career, where does math really fit into it? So maybe that's what we need to be focusing on.
So, Dr. Gupta, when my kid says to me, why should I finish my algebra homework, what do you tell them? What do you say to that?
Well, I have three daughters, so I get asked that question all the time. I mean, it's clear that we have to bring real-world examples to kids, especially young girls. And one of the interesting statistics is that about 22% of our undergraduate classes are now women. But in my tax, we've got about 35% of our graduate students are women. So clearly women in particular are drawn to application areas, which suggests that when we teach mathematics at the younger ages, we have to make it very real. We have to tie everything back to the world around them, especially in the life sciences. We find that in all our programs where we're doing research in health and social sciences, many more women get attracted to those areas. So, and I think these things are pretty endemic. So at a young age, we have to start building those ties. And what I'd like to see is really close ties between mathematicians and education so that mathematicians themselves are able to impart that kind of knowledge. Having someone like Rebecca come into a classroom and talk about her virtual liver, I think we'll get many more kids to relate to the mathematics.
And in the end, are there the good quality, full-time, high-paying jobs connected to this in this country on the research side as well? Or are you seeing people having to go to the United States?
Well, that's one of our big challenges at MITx. Right now, in our graduate programs in mathematics, 51% of our foreign students and about 20% of our Canadian students will have left the country 2 years after their graduation. We think that's a travesty, and one of our main goals, and maybe our most important goals, is to create the job base in Canada so these young people can stay in Canada, apply their skills here, and make this country much richer.
I thank you both for joining us, and thanks for coming to Winnipeg and being part of this.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Cluche. You're listening to the Superstation, CJOB 68.